This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
Space is hot. Yes, I do in fact know that outer space is icy cold. But here on planet Earth, shows about the planets and exploration of the universe are turning some astrophysicists into rock stars. Well, now there's one who'd rather be a star in interpretive dance.
So that we can bring all this amazing knowledge and drama that we've uncovered about the universe to new audiences. So why don't we use dance?
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll talk to an astrophysicist who's putting together a multimedia presentation that's out of this world. Then we'll hear about a unique program in Massachusetts that's helping high school students get a good start to the day. And we'll spend an academic minute with a bunch of hungry college kids. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. If you've recently gone to a planetarium, you've seen that they are more than just colorful dioramas depicting pretty pictures of the planets and stars. They've become true multimedia experiences. Now, a scientist who we've spoken to before has let us know that he's trying to take multimedia to a very different place. The project is called Song of the Stars, and it will be launched in April in Columbus, Ohio. It's the brainchild of Dr. Paul Sutter, an astrophysicist at The Ohio State University and the chief scientist at COSI Science Center in Columbus, Ohio. I talked to Dr. Sutter about this project and asked where the idea came from.
This started in my brain about last April, March, May, somewhere around late spring last year. I've been pushing over the past year. I've been thinking of new ways that I can bring science to new audiences, like through my podcast and through my space.com articles, through my media appearances. I pretty much know the audience that's going to show up, basically all the space geeks. And, you know, I love them all. You know, don't get the wrong impression. But I know there's a big audience out there that just isn't interested in space. And I believe that the reason they're not interested in space or astronomy or physics or really any science topic is because they haven't been shared science with them in a way that they can understand and they can appreciate and enjoy. So I've been cooking up ideas to really retell these stories that we know about the universe, things that we've revealed through science, and find new ways to express them, new stories to tell, so that we can bring all this amazing knowledge and drama that we've uncovered about the universe to new audiences. So I thought of the idea, why don't we use dance? This isn't exactly a new idea. In fact, in digging around, I discovered that in 1939, there was something called the chemical ballet, where the participants in the ballet were different chemicals participating in a reaction, and the whole ballet was themed from that. And over the past few years, a science magazine has sponsored the Dance Your PhD project, where they encourage people who recently got their PhD to interpretively dance what they do. So it's not exactly a new idea, but I wanted to partner with professionals. I wanted to partner with a professional dance company and let them kind of guide the performance. So I didn't want to dictate what their movements would be. I didn't want to tell them exactly what to do. I just wanted to share with them some stories, some ideas, some pictures, some things that I know, and then let them run with it so that they could tell these stories in their own way, in a way that makes sense to them as artists.
So what are you asking them to interpret?
In this particular performance for Song of the Stars, we are telling the life stories of the stars above. So we're starting over 13 billion years ago with the formation of the first stars in the universe in complete darkness. We're following some stars as maybe they raise a family of planets. Some of them lose a companion to a black hole. Some of them die themselves in a supernova explosion that can be seen from across the universe. So we're tracing 13 billion years of the story of the stars in one night. It's not going to take us 13 billion years to interpret it. We shortened it a bit.
That would be good. That would be a long night.
Yeah. Great price if our performance lasted 13 million years, a $25 ticket. That's a lot of bang for your buck.
It is. What form of dance is this going to be done?
Yeah, so the company I'm working with, they're called Seven Dance Company. They're a local independent professional company here in Columbus. And their particular style is called ballet-based contemporary dance. So it's a very highly polished technique. It's modern dance, so, you know, it's not like stuffy ballet that you might think of, traditional ballet. But it doesn't, that definitely has a lot of the techniques and language kind of inspired from ballet, but then brought into a more modern context.
I mean, I've heard of interpretive dance, but this has to be the most interpretive I've ever heard of. I mean, they could really go anywhere with this.
Yeah, and that's, they've been having so much fun with this project. That's why they really latched onto it, the dancers and choreographers there, because they told me when they're looking for stories for inspiration in dance, there's like the usual stories to tell. There's, you know, like every Christmas there's a Nutcracker ballet, you know, or something like that. From their perspective as artists, there's this, literally this entire universe worth of stories to tell, to draw inspiration from. So I would just sit down with them and I'd share a particular scenario. Like a star finds itself surrounded by a bunch of new planets, and these planets are chaotic and going everywhere, and it's messy and it's horrible. But then over time, the system settles down, and you know, you can kind of interpret this scenario as, you know, maybe a new mother trying to balance everything, trying to get grips with their life. And at first, it seems all impossible, but you settle into a rhythm and you figure it out. And so it's like taking the opportunity to take these stories and give them a human context, give them an emotional context, and then using that to inspire the movement of the dance. So say, okay, here's our scenario. We don't want to just copy the physics, because that would be two dancers spinning and then crashing into each other and blowing up or something. We want to creatively interpret that. We want to take the emotional essence, or the physical essence, like what's the one key idea that we want the audience to take away from this piece, and then use that to guide the movement of the dancers.
Are they working with existing pieces of music, or is there original music in this?
We decided to work with existing pieces of music for this one, because already we're breaking some pretty new ground in blending physics and astronomy and dance. And adding another piece in of, you know, having original music, we thought that we'll save that for next year.
And who are you hoping to bring in here? Are you looking for young people, old people, just plain people?
Pretty much anyone that will buy a ticket. I will let you in the door. Now, I really want families to come. That's why we made sure that the ticket price was really reasonable, so that like a family of four could show up. Everything I do when it comes to outreach, I try to have something in there for everyone. So if you're a space geek, you'll come and you'll get to hear some familiar stories, some things you might already be familiar with, but seen in a new way, seen through this professional dance performance. And if you're an arts geek, if you're all about dance, then you can still come too, and you get to see a professional, beautiful dance performance sourced from these really interesting stories that no one's really told before in dance. And if you're young, if you're just interested in either science or dance, you can come, pull something away from it. If you're older, if it's a date night, it's really meant for all ages and all backgrounds.
Are the stories going to be told just by dance, or will there be narration?
Yeah, so I'm going to be narrating because, like I said, these dances are very creative, a little bit abstract. So we want to make sure that the audience has a hook and it can follow along in the story. So I'm going to be in the performance as the narrator, and the scene we're trying to set is that I'm telling this story. Telling about all this drama, telling about all this emotions happening through all these stars and all these billions of years, everything they encounter. And episodes from my narration will be almost magically brought to life through dance. and I'll get off the stage, you'll see the beautiful dance, you'll have some sense of what's going on because I've set it up with my narration, and then after the dance, I'll come back out, I interact with the dancers, you know, I talk with them, I move them around the stage to segue into the next episode.
Not exactly your average astrophysics class.
Not exactly. The cool thing is, you know, we're telling this story and we're being dramatic about it, but there's going to be some, you know, a little bit of technical terms thrown in. There'll be hints here and there of the real science so that if you are interested, you know, we'll have a program book and everything that you could take away from the performance. There's enough in there that if your curiosity gets piqued, you can start doing some Google searches and dig more deeply into it to see the physics that inspired all these beautiful art pieces.
Still to come, when our conversation with astrophysicist Paul Sutter continues, he'll tell us how he's trying to make this performance available to everyone, everywhere. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Our guest today is Dr. Paul Sutter, an astrophysicist at The Ohio State University and the chief scientist at COSI Science Center in Columbus, Ohio. We're talking about his new project, Songs of the Stars, which sets out to tell the stories of the stars in the universe in interpretive dance. Now, this is going on in Columbus, of course, but It looks like you've got a little project on the side, too, that perhaps we might get to see this someplace on our own in the future.
Yeah, exactly. So this is such an amazing collaboration, an unlikely collaboration. And it was born here in Columbus with all these great Columbus institutions pitching in to make it happen. But we really want to share it with the world. And to do that, we have two film projects associated with the dance. The first film project is we're going to film the live premiere. The premiere is April 21st in Columbus. We're going to film it, have it professionally filmed, professionally edited, and that's going to be distributed, sold, however we can get it out to classrooms, to TV broadcasters, to the internet. And that will be one way that you might be able to see what happened at this performance. And then after the premiere, a couple weeks after the premiere, we're doing something really revolutionary. We're going to take all these dance pieces and the narration that we created, and we're going to film them again with special 360-degree cameras. See, these are cameras that see in every single direction at once. And the choreographers and the dancers, they all know this, so that when we record, there's pieces of the choreography that make sense in a circle instead of making sense on a stage. And we're going to film this, and with this 360-degree footage, again, we're going to professionally filmed, professionally edited. This is going to be distributed on the internet through virtual reality headsets, and it's also going to be distributed to planetariums all around the world. So planetariums nowadays, they're not the old, ball in the middle of the room with a bunch of lights coming out, and you take a tour of the constellations. Planetariums nowadays are fully digital theaters. They're immersive theaters. They take up like 90% of your vision when you lay back. They're super high resolution. They're really fantastic places now. Less planetarium, and you can think of them more now as really immersive theaters. And we're going to make a version that can be played back in planetariums. So you can go to your local planetarium, hopefully, if they buy our film, and they'll show this, and you'll see the dance from, you know, all directions. You'll be immersed in this experience. You'll be surrounded by dance. you'll have these astronomy themes. You'll get some astronomy education in there, but it's really a new way to experience dance.
This just sounds like such a cool project. You will not, of course, be dancing. You'll just be talking.
No, I would not make people pay to see me dance. So the premiere is scheduled. We got the funding we needed to make the premiere happen. You know, we could buy costumes, you know, we could do lighting, we could do the whole thing, pay our rental fee for the theater. So the premiere is happening. But the films, to pay for that, we're launching a Kickstarter. And because we want to share this with the world, we're looking for the help from the entire world to help pay for it. And it doesn't have to be much, you know, $10, $20. You know, if you've got $1,000, I'm not going to tell you no. But any little contribution helps.
Dr. Paul Sutter is an astrophysicist at The Ohio State University and the chief scientist at COSI Science Center in Columbus, Ohio. You can learn more about the project and find the Kickstarter link at songofthestars.org. The students and staff at Central High School in Springfield, Massachusetts, got a visit from the federal official in charge of the National Nutrition Programs recently to see the results of a unique effort that has dramatically increased the number of children who start the day with a nutritious breakfast. The Best of Our Knowledge's Paul Tuttle reports.
Thank you. Come on in.
When 2,000 students stream through the doors of Central High School every morning just after 7, breakfast is waiting for them. Right in their first period homeroom. Freshman Nicholas Metzger is one of hundreds of students at Central whose eating habits have changed since the school introduced the Breakfast in the Classroom program last November.
I didn't eat breakfast before Breakfast in the Classroom started, but now that I don't have to go out of my way or get here earlier, I do.
The Springfield High School is the only one in Massachusetts and one of only a few in the country that offers students breakfast every day in their classroom. Timothy Gray, the district's food service administrator, says only 25% of Central students ate breakfast when it was available just in the cafeteria. Now, almost 90% of the students are eating breakfast.
It just kickstarts the day for these kids. Everything that revolves around it, there's a lot less trips to the nurses at around 10 o'clock because kids are hungry. There's, better attention span.
Because of the city's high poverty rate, all 29,000 Springfield Public School students are eligible for free breakfast and lunch. The district began offering breakfast in the classrooms at some elementary schools a few years ago as a pilot program. There were questions, however, if it could be done in a high school because of the logistics involved.
It's well-organized chaos.
Michael Walcott, executive chef for Sodexo, the district's food service contractor, says the Central High cafeteria staff begins arriving at 4:30 in the morning to put that day's breakfast selections into insulated bags that are delivered to 110 classrooms by 7 a.m. The actual cooking, baking, and prep work, such as slicing fresh fruit, is done the day before.
Two or three times a week, we'll do either a breakfast sandwich or we do pancakes. When there's a hot, there's also a cold option sent, too. So if a kid doesn't want the hot option, they always have a chance for at least cereal or something.
The daily breakfast options also include juice, yogurt, granola, and milk. U.S. Department of Agriculture Administrator Audrey Rowe, who oversees the government's $1.2 billion national nutrition programs, toured the kitchen and cafeteria at Central and visited with students in two classrooms as they enjoyed their breakfasts Friday.
Everybody was eating everything on their plate, everything that was in that packet. And I assume the same thing happens for lunch. So I'm impressed with what they're doing here.
Rose said she would encourage other school districts to consider breakfast in the classroom or some other grab-and-go option.
It's a heavy lift for principals. They really have to think about what this means in terms of the academic timetable that they have in the classroom. Custodians get concerned. Because what does it mean for the cleanup? So this takes a lot of organization.
Springfield Superintendent of Schools Dan Warwick said there's a plan to expand the Breakfast in the Classroom program to all of the city's schools in 3 years. He said increasing the number of children who eat breakfast every day should help the district close achievement gaps and improve overall academic performance.
The research is very solid. The state's pushing it.
Springfield received $18 million from the USDA to pay for school nutrition programs this year.
And that report came to us from the best of our knowledge's Paul Tuttle in Springfield, Massachusetts. It's not just high schoolers who need a little help getting fed. Food insecurity is a problem on many college campuses in the U.S., and that's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Food insecurity is becoming a big issue on college campuses. I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of Mount Holyoke College, and today on the Academic Minute, Sarah Goldrick-Robb, professor of educational policy studies and sociology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, delves into her research on this topic.
At the Wisconsin Hope Lab, we study college affordability. Part of our research concerns barriers to student access and persistence, barriers such as the ever-rising costs of tuition, supplies, and housing. Our work tells us that food insecurity is a growing problem on college campuses. We conduct regular and extensive surveys of college students, and alarmingly, some students tell us they cannot afford to buy enough food to stay in college. They say they have to choose between food and rent, or food and family needs, or food and the courses they must have to graduate. In a recent survey that my colleagues and I conducted at 10 community colleges across the nation, half of all surveyed students reported struggling with food and/or housing insecurity. Fully 20% are hungry, and 13% are homeless. This is not a new problem. We first asked students about food insecurity in 2008, when we began interviewing low-income students at public universities and colleges across Wisconsin. Of those students, 27% did not have enough money to buy enough food, period. And 5-7% of the students had gone an entire day without eating. Among the ideas that could be further studied, make the federal supplemental nutrition assistance program more student-friendly by allowing college attendance to count for the work requirement. Enough people enroll in college each year to largely meet the projected workforce needs of our country, but not enough finish, some for lack of food, and our research suggests that this could undermine the economy for years to come.
That was Sarah Goldrick-Robb of the University of Wisconsin. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in partnership with Mount Holyoke College. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast or any of the other National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.